As a society, we are getting fatter and fatter with each passing year. To some, an extra roll around the gut or a double chin is just a joke. To others, it's a sign of gluttony. But in the eyes of medical science, it is serious business. Obesity is costing us hundreds of billions in medical treatment and lost revenue. Excess fat is a liability. It increases risk of mortality and forces millions of people to live in a morbid state. Morbidity, in medical terms, is defined as a condition or state of disease. Obesity is a disease of mind and body, and it is preventable. No pill will cure it. And what is its primary cause? Physical inactivity and poor nutrition. It's as simple as that. With the right information and a desire to turn things around, almost anyone can change the composition of their mass. We're all stuck with our skeletal structure, the length of our bones, and our height as adults. But the flesh attached to it is something we have a large degree of control over. We can tone, build, or maintain muscle through exercise, or let nature dematerialize us over time through stress and oxidation. For example, we can take preventive action or stand by helplessly watching our own house burn down because someone left the dryer on all night or forgot to unplug the iron. Most accidents, if not all, are preventable, and so it is with body composition. If you have excess body fat, it is not an accident. It is something that you have control over. We can modify our intake of fats and carbohydrates or cram everything in sight down the tube to satisfy our every waking desire. It's a choice. Food and drink is basically inanimate. It doesn't call out to us or possess us or force us to consume it. We are in the driver's seat all the way. We have our hands on the helm. We are the captain of our own ship. We turn the rudder this way or that way. Yes, it's true. We can't always control the wind or the waves, but we can raise or lower the sails depending on the weather. We can also seek a safe harbor in anticipation of a storm, the knowledge of which is obtained by taking the time to check the weather forecast. Likewise with food, we can avoid situations that tempt us beyond our control, and we can plan meals instead of leaving them and nutrition to chance. Much of what it comes down to is our internal dialogue. We see the cake, we want the cake, but we know the cake is bad. So we pull back and forth on the rope of conviction in our mind like a mental tug of war. Logic on one side, emotion on the other. Who will win this time? We convince ourselves one way and then the other, and then back and forth it goes until eventually we cave in and guess what? We eat the cake. Why? Because it feels good. It tastes wonderful. It satisfies our desire. We convince ourselves that we can have our cake and eat it too. Temptation is hard to resist, so we need a strong defense. To do it right requires knowledge, devotion, and a strong sense of self-esteem and self-worth. It takes time to learn and patience to put the right gear in motion, like driving a standard for the first time. But after a while, you get the hang of it, and in no time flat, driving becomes second nature. Many of us will have to undo years of negligence and abuse, but the remedy isn't nearly as complicated as putting it in motion day in and day out. The hardest part is staying on track. The hardest part is applying what you know you've got to do. But for whatever reason, and there are many, you have trouble doing it. In the practical sense, it's eating, training, sleeping, and living in sync with what has to be done and should be done, as opposed to what you feel like doing. It's like telling children why they need to brush their teeth or do their homework. Without direction and discipline, children will seldom do anything except play, watch TV, and eat junk food. Sound familiar? Any parent will confirm this. Believe me, I know, I got three kids, and if I don't keep them in order to some degree, the inherent nature of humanity is not to do what we have to do, but to do what we want to do a lot of the time. The majority of people in North America tend to have a slow metabolic rate. Each one of us has a set point, or what is known as a genetic predisposition. My estimate is that only 20% of the population are ectomorphs. That's a body type, and that means you're naturally lean and can't gain weight regardless of how much food you eat. The rest of us are endomorphs. That's another term that describes a specific kind of body type. Those of us who are endomorphs, which is most of the population, we have to constantly fight the battle of the bulge, and we tend to gain body fat without much effort. We are blessed with the ability to store unlimited amounts of energy. Some people are blessed with an ideal and balanced biochemistry. They seem to gain muscle without much effort as a result of weight training and appear more muscular than the average person due to a relatively low percentage of body fat. This is the classic body type typified by cartoon superheroes, the so-called mesomorph. So we've got an ectomorph, which is lean, an endomorph, which is round and bulgy, and the mesomorph, which looks like Hercules or Tarzan or Superman. Differences in individual body type are important to understand. This is why I dedicated an entire chapter to this topic in the CSNA education program. Now let's say that you're over fat and need to lose a few inches from around your waist. Before you design any workout or special diet program, get in touch with your body type and genetics. Don't try and be something that you're not. Resistance is futile. Work with the program, look at the big picture, and change the lifestyle pattern responsible for your state of mind and body. Identify what you must do to change the outcome of your shape and size. The only way to overcome your disposition to gain body fat, if in fact you have such a disposition, is to understand the principles involved. Exercise is the anchor and nutrition is the chain attached to it. The ship is your body. Let your training slide and your diet will slide. Guaranteed. Take control of your metabolism. Induce a steady state of thermogenesis. Get physically active. Eat nutritious food routinely. Focus on food quality and micronutrient density. Use protein to your advantage. Drink plenty of pure water. And guess what? The results you want will come because now you're in sync with the law. And when you live according to the law through the spirit of goodwill and self-control, there is no penalty. Energy abounds. Athletic activity is a joy. And you feel good about what you've accomplished. Now, failure to differentiate between weight and mass is a significant cause of frustration and defeat. It sets the weight-conscious individual up for failure right from the start, focusing on weight instead of body composition and mass. When I hear someone say, "I need to lose weight," I know right away they're doomed to lose more muscle and water instead of fat, rebound from whatever form of deprivation they've managed to conjure up or copy, and end up with more fat than what they started with. The key is to begin with the right foot forward, like ballroom dancing. You have to move your feet to a set pattern according to the rhythm. The man always leads, the woman always follows. There is a line of dance, and all of this is a function of dance theory and protocol taught to teachers who in turn teach the method to their students. And so it is with the science of fitness and nutrition. Our lean mass must be distinguished from non-essential body fat, and under no conditions do we want to lose bone mass, muscle, organ tissue, or blood. What we're made of, our composition, tells a more accurate story of health and potential function than weight alone. For example, a woman in her 40s might weigh only 52 kilograms, which is 115 pounds. She might look good with the clothes on, but underneath, her veil of clothing, her flesh, might lack muscle tone and appear soft and flabby. She might even have cellulite. On the other hand, after 1 to 2 years of training and a good diet, that same woman now weighs maybe 135 pounds or 61 kilograms, But because she is leaner, toned, and well-conditioned, she now looks and feels fantastic. It's like she's been transformed. And even though she's older, she looks younger. And yes, even the cellulite is gone now because she stopped eating bread, cheese, and sweets as daily staples and instead switched to lean proteins, low glycemic carbs, fresh garden greens, and she increased her consumption of water. She now has control of her body shape and understands what to do. Muscle is denser than fat. A pound of each weighs the same, but fat takes up about 5 times more space. So without an accurate body composition analysis, you can't determine how much protein you eat, and you certainly can't tell by looking, so it's left to conjecture. Even body composition experts have a hard time estimating body fat percentage without using some form of technology. But once you know what percentage of your body is storage fat, you can set specific goals and measure your progress along the way. Focus on using stored fat as a fuel source. Keep your blood sugar and insulin in the zone. Train consistently. Lift weights to build muscle. Use aerobic exercise to condition your heart and lungs. Stretch to stay loose and limber. And by modifying your intake of carbs and fat, your body fat percentage will drop and stay down just as long as you continue with the program. Now, the average Canadian male age 30 carries about 18 to 22% body fat, whereas the average 30-year-old female carries around 24 to 28%. As age increases, so does body fat, although this is not a function of age. It's just a statistical correlation. 30 to 35% and beyond is not uncommon in population groups over age 50. I mean, that average is out of control because that's way too much body fat. 30 to 35% as a standard for post-age 50? No wonder these people have no energy and are not motivated to change the lifestyle because maybe they feel like they're too far gone. These figures represent standards of body fat composition that are far too high for optimum health and athletic performance. And keep in mind, there is a graduation in obesity that progresses from the upper limit of so-called normal to as high as 50 to 70%. The highest I've ever measured is 67% body fat. So if our norms are inches away from obesity and creeping higher year by year, we know we've definitely got a problem. Based on studies which demonstrate an undeniable link between excess body fat and impaired cardiac function, hypertension and stroke, adult onset diabetes, renal disease, pulmonary disease, osteoarthritis, degenerative joint disease, several forms of cancer, menstrual difficulties, and an enormous psychological burden, an ideal standard of 15% or less for men and 20% or less for women would be more appropriate. It's actually ideal. A report from the National Institutes of Health concluded that obesity should be viewed as a chronic degenerative disease because there are multiple biologic hazards of premature illness and death at surprisingly low levels of excess fat, meaning as little as 5 to 10 pounds above desirable weight. Not 5 to 10 pounds of weight, but 5 to 10 pounds of fat. Focus on fat and managing fat when it comes to body composition. That's the issue of concern, not muscle, other than we lose muscle as we age because we're inactive and not feeding ourselves well. So we've got to pump some iron and get that muscle level up. That raises our metabolic rate and gives us strength and power. Now, there are many different methods of body composition analysis, including skin calibers, bioelectrical impedance, near-infrared interactants, dual energy X-ray absorptiometry, that's called DEXA, hydrostatic or water displacement, and now the BOD pod, which uses air displacement to measure body composition. Perhaps more important than the form of analysis is the competency of the individual performing the test, so make sure that whoever is performing the procedure is experienced. Inaccurate results can be very misleading. Body composition analysis is recommended at least every 6 months and is extremely motivating for training purposes. Monthly is even better. I have my own bioelectrical impedance unit at home and use body composition assessment almost daily like a mirror. It's a great investment for anyone and especially useful for healthcare providers and people that work in the sports nutrition field, whether you're a retailer, a supplier, or a manufacturer. Body mass index, or BMI, is derived from a calculation of body weight and stature. BMI is your weight in kilograms divided by your height in meters squared. It demonstrates a curvy linear relationship to the all-cause mortality ratio and is useful as a general reference for sedentary folk. Although used by clinicians and many researchers, BMI fails to consider the proportional composition of the body. That's why I don't like it, and here's where the Costanza principle from the hit comedy series Seinfeld comes in. Remember how George becomes successful by doing the opposite of what he normally would do in any given situation? I recommend doing the same when it comes to nutrition. Do the opposite of what convention teaches, and you'll live leaner and longer with less disease. BMI is connected to a low standard without reference to physical shape or athletic condition. It's an easy-to-swallow model of convention. I think it misleads people into thinking their body composition is acceptable, which it often isn't. A lean athlete, bodybuilder, or gymnast, for example, who supports higher quantities of muscle mass than so-called normal people, will appear to have a high BMI. This leads to an incorrect and erroneous interpretation, as does the typical reference to medical insurance tables based on height and weight. For these reasons, body composition assessment is definitely preferable, and practically speaking, I'd rather use a mirror and a measuring tape than BMI. Now here's a simple but effective procedure. Remove your clothes and stand in front of a full-length mirror. Take a good look at yourself. You can see whether you're fit or fat. Turn around and notice the size and shape of your rear end. Examine its contour and skin tone. Excess flab tends to hang loose. It can't oppose the force of gravity like muscle because fat doesn't contract. It just hangs out. Storage fat tends to reveal itself around hips, thighs, and your buttocks. In others, it concentrates around the waist, under the arms, and under the chin. Don't be afraid to have a good look. See yourself as you really are, and if you don't like what you see, and you understand the significance of excess fat to performance, health, and disease, then take action to change your habits of life. And I'll tell you why. Because nobody else will. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from Tootie Fields. "I've been on a diet for 2 weeks, and all I've lost is 2 weeks."